Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What up, motherfuckers? It's the Real Ass Podcast. It's your boy, Louis J. Gomez.
Where's my Stank, Real Ass Dude, Ultimate Minority, Joan Jett of Comedy. I got a lot of names.
International Superstar Zach D'Amico.
How you doing, buddy?
He's funny. He's a psycho. He's a real ass dude.
I was double-teaming this chick with her husband. Now he's selling coke in heaven.
Are you fucking ready, motherfuckers?
It's the only real podcast left out there.
White power. Hell yeah.
Sorry, Dave.
Fucking Martin Luther King Day, bro.
That's how we start the show. God damn it, white power. Am I
fucking
right, guys?
Martin Luther King
Can we talk
King
about
Day,
the accomplishments
bro?
Of the white man today?
Can I get in? Can I get in on that white power?
Hell yeah, dude.
white popcorn.
White power. What's up, doggies? How y'all doing, baby boys? Welcome to Real Ass Podcast. I'm back. I'm alive. Went skiing. That's why I'm on a white power kick right now.
Oh, you're the whitest of activities.
Oh, yeah.
The whitest of activities.
You saw no black people this weekend, did you?
I felt so white and powerful as I was skiing down that slope.
He fell down the mountain and actually more money grew in his wallet.
Yeah, it was fucking incredible. Welcome to the Real Ass Podcast. It's your boy, Louis J. Gomez, here in studio with the international superstar, Zach D'Amico. Very happy to be back this week.
It's nice to have you back, my friend.
Yeah, it was. I was supposed to do a makeup episode on Friday, and I do apologize for those people that were expecting it. I just couldn't get around to it. I had so much going on. If you go on a little vacation, you come back, everything starts fucking, you know, stacking up
on you.
Yeah. So, Zach D'Amico, how are you feeling?
I feel great, man.
I love that hat. I love that Marilyn Manson.
Thank you.
Don't say it. It's the children. Something about children. Coke children, cocaine
yep.
children.
Yep, that's it. You got it.
What is it? Smells like children.
Yeah,
smells like children hat. Hell yeah. All right, look, we have a great show planned today. Very happy to have back on the show. Now officially, the new co-host for No Need for Apologies with Derek Gaines, ladies and gentlemen, Dave Temple's back.
What's going on, man?
Sup, kid?
Yeah, Wednesdays, 1 p.m. right after Gas Digital, man. So right after Real
it's
Ass.
The black morning show here. On
yeah,
Gas
it's a black ass morning show, bro. We got fucking Dante Nero on this week. Oh God,
I don't know if you really got what you said.
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Also, very happy to have back on the show. It's been way too long. You guys know him from the Creepy Corner, where you can get it everywhere on iTunes, Spotify, all that other stuff. Creepy Corner NYC, creepycorner.nyc. Ladies and gentlemen, Anthony Zenhauser joins
the
show again.
Nice. So, thanks for having me, guys.
It's good to been see a while, man. When's the last time you were on the show?
I think it was like a month ago. I think I was with Ian Fidance was on. It was
I wasn't here.
Your boy Harrington. Yeah, you were here. You guys just got back from some boxing match.
I think
in
still
Florida,
smoking at that time,
he just got back from Florida. Florida?
No, they got back from Lake Havistraw.
Oh, Lake Havistraw. You were in a box.
Havistraw, that's where I grew up. West Havistraw.
Yeah, well, you fell off a mat into the water and they were making fun of you.
You were on the show right after that? No, you weren't.
This is what happens all the time. I am so.
Can I be honest with you? I was coming off a real bad drug binge that week, too.
I don't remember this at all.
Dude, you were laughing at my jokes.
You guys are just creatures of habit, which is remarkable that you can get up, produce a fucking show, and not even mentally be here.
Let me just say, I really enjoyed Harrington's fight.
I don't. Are you serious? You were on the show?
No, I'm totally. Yeah, of course I'm serious. Yeah, I was here.
Shannon,
what number was that? Back it up. Let's see.
Shannon, help me out here.
Shannon, do you remember?
I was a late get because I think maybe somebody dropped out.
I love having you on the show. Also, is he a little bit low? I feel like his volume.
He is. I have him jacked. Can you just maybe get up on the mic a little bit more?
Wow.
Perfect.
Can I look at Dave when I do it?
Don't do that.
Okay, sorry about that.
It was episode 618.
Wow.
Yeah, the forgotten episode.
Forgettable performance,
Zenhauser. I had the biggest laugh of the night. I had the biggest laugh of the day. Harrington spit at fucking Dylan or Dylan, and then he brought him a cup of spit.
Jesus,
I remember that.
I remember the cup
with,
of spit
with the water.
Oh. We remember the cup guys of spit way more than we remember you.
More memorable.
And then you chastised him for bringing for spilling the coffee. It was like this big thing.
Oh yeah, Dylan threw something and knocked coffee everywhere.
And then you were screaming
this
at him.
Sucks,
and then
because this sounds like this was such a big night for him, man.
It was a big deal. The biggest moment of his year.
By the way, my new show is on Gas Digital.
Look, we have a great show planned today. As always, I'm very happy to be back from skiing, but I will tell you right now, I got the bug. AIDS. Yeah. I have HIV. I'm HIV positive, guys. I fucked a couple guys on that mountain, and yeah, here
get
I am.
Was this on one left. Of the places that has like hot tubs and shit?
Yeah. So yeah. We went to Killington, Vermont, which was the whitest place I've ever been in my entire life. Not a single black person.
I've seen signs for it. Yeah, going to Maine.
Anyway, can you look up the racial diversity of Killington, Vermont?
I'm going to go less than 8%.
And I shit you not, not a single black person did I see the entire...
They shortened the name from killing tons of black people.
I was going to say.
Yes.
Not to piggyback on that, but I was gonna say they should call it Killing It Vermont.
Jesus, good.
Racial
Asians. White, they let Asians in?
87.3% white, followed by Asian, 10.7%, followed by Hispanic, 0.7%. There are no black people. Yeah. There's so little black people that they don't even register as a point of a percent.
Are there black people in Vermont?
I don't know, but Killington was the whitest place I've ever been in my entire life. It was fucking beautiful. I felt like so accomplished. I mean, wow.
Well, for 10%, it's Carrington.
Listen to me. This place was beautiful. I got to be honest with you. I thought we were going to go skiing. You know, I'm in a new relationship. I was like, let's get out of town, have a little romantic fucking thing. I thought we were going to take a skiing lesson and be like, this sucks. It's freezing. Let's just go bang in the condo and drink hot cocoa the whole time. But I just left my chick the whole... I mean, I'm just going down slope. She's on the fucking little chick hills. I'm like, all right, see you later, bitch. I skied so much. And I had so much fun skiing. I don't know if you guys have ever been skiing.
Hell yeah.
It was fucking...
By the way, this is not the demographic.
Two fat guys and a black guy. I don't know if you guys have ever been skiing.
I've been snowboarding and all that shit before.
You've been snowboarding?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've skied. Believe it or not, dude, all right, this whole sentence is about to sound like bullshit, but you guys got to believe it. It's fucking Martin Luther King Day.
Right. My dad
used to ski.
Your dad used to ski.
My dad...
Now, your dad used to wear a ski mask.
My dad was a part of the Blazers ski club. It is a black ski club that exists in Philadelphia.
You could have just said exist and we would have been impressed.
So your dad was on the cool runnings of ski clubs.
Yeah, my dad, he's done all of that shit. Jackson Hole, all of that, anything you can think of. My dad, he's done all, he competed, all of that shit.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome. It's a really...
Why did they call themselves the Philadelphia Mudslide?
Dude, it was really, really fun.
Yeah.
It was way more fun than I thought it was going to be.
Is this your first time?
First time ever skiing.
Oh, really?
Life.
Wait a second. So you just took on the big slopes right there. You
yeah.
just went...
Yeah.
Well, it was sort of
yeah, they were 10% of the population.
There it is.
It was an accident. The time, sorry, first day I go and I take a lesson. And you know, an hour into the lesson, I'm like, all right, we could just fucking leave this guy. I'm done. All right. He's an old guy. He's like, oh, you got a pizza, you got a french fry, all that other shit.
Yeah.
Who cares? I got it. As soon as I was up on the skis and I went down a couple of hills, I was like, I understand now. Okay. And really, more than anything else, there's no amount of explaining to you. You have to do. Now, there's some techniques you sort of mentally connect with some of the techniques, but there's like three things. You know, beyond that, like, it's them just filling in time and they're trying to teach you slowly so you buy more ski lessons. But I got it. I was like, oh, I have to go and fall down a bunch and get back up a bunch and understand the process and how my body moves and how the snow and the ice feels. It's, you know, that process, you have to just go and do it. There's no words that are going to tell you how to do it. So
let me ask you this. Did the boots make you reevaluate how you've been wearing sneakers and supporting your ankles your entire life?
What do you mean?
Like, they're so tight and supportive, and you're like, oh, wow. Like, if this is what ankle support is supposed to feel like, none of us are getting this.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, you know, you need more ankle support. The boots were sort of uncomfortable. I did rentals. I rented all the stuff. But I spent a lot of money on, because one of the things that I read before you go skiing, and this is a tip that I'll give to everybody before you go skiing, you don't want to get cold. You don't want, because if you get cold, within an hour, you're going to want to go home. And that's the way that I felt. I was like, this is going to be like sled riding. And every time I've gone sled riding, I'm wearing some shitty fucking cotton gloves. Some snow gets down the back of my neck. It just sucked. As a kid, I hated it. Yeah. I hated it. And I was like, I'm not going to enjoy a winter vacation. But I spent a lot of money on really good snow pants, a really big, you know, insulated jacket designed for skiing, the undergarments, the fucking, you know, the whole mask that goes over the whole head.
How much did you drop on it?
Between me and my girl, I spent just on the apparel,
on the gear,
$1,900.
$1,900?
Just on the apparel.
Now do you understand why black people just do basketball?
Yeah. Simple as that. Like they are trying to keep minorities out of this sport. And that's why they price us out of it. But I said, fuck it. I'll spend a little bit of money on it because number one, like,
there's one thing black people won't do is buy expensive shoes for those.
But I figured if I spent some money on this, I would probably want to use it again. And if I really didn't like it, I could fucking return the apparel. Like if I hated it and I was like, I'm never gonna use it again. Yeah. I'll return the fucking shit.
Get rid of the girl, too.
Is that a scam that Jew?
Scam that Jew, baby. You can go skiing and just buy all the shit and then return it.
This was a clothe that Jew.
So,
clothe Jew.
So, once you get out there, you're, you know, it's fucking, you're on a mountain. It's, you know, it's 20 degrees. I was so warm. Like, so warm. The gloves I got were great. Everything was fucking great. And I didn't get cold one single time. And that's one of the reasons why I think that I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I did bust my ass one time. I tweeted about this and I posted on Instagram. It was it's almost like out of a sitcom. It's such a Lewis moment, what happened. So when you go on the ski lift, you know, I was using this one ski lift the whole time on the Green Hill, and you'd get up and you lean forward and you go to the right and you're like, all right, cool. I'm fucking here. I can go down the hill now. At one point, I was like, I'm going to go down a more challenging hill. I'm going to go down a blue hill. So it goes green, blue, black, double black, right? Which we call no need for apologies or double black. And when I went to get off the lift or when I was at the top of the lift, it wasn't just you get off and go to the right. It was like a big drop. And I was like, well, that's not where you got to get off.
Get off.
That's crazy.
It's like a bus.
So I stayed on it and then they stopped it. They're like, they were like, you got to get off. This guy starts yelling at me from the booth. I was like, oh, shit. Because I missed so I had to jump down 3 feet. I jump down. I fall down immediately. Now, everyone on the lift, because it stopped, you just hear the collective tutting of fucking tongues and sighs of people like, oh, God, another fucking fat
poor people on the slope.
Yeah, dude.
You hear quiet spick. Yeah.
It was embarrassing. So then I'm not athletic, so every time I fall, I have to take one of my skis off and then stand up and then put it back on. Fuck you, dude. How do you get up with a fucking with skis on? It makes no sense, okay? I have no idea. So now people are fucking furious. When you're on a ski lift waiting to get off, 2 minutes must feel like an eternity,
yeah, right.
You know? So I get up and I'm like, ah. And I realize that I had taken the wrong lift up, and now I'm on a really, really high hill. Like, so it was fucking crazy. And I'm watching people just drop in, and I'm like, wow, that's fucking crazy. I can't do that at all. And I'm just kind of staring at the sign, not realizing I'm still on the path of where people have to get off. So now people are just yelling at me from behind. I didn't even fucking notice that there's people yelling. So I move out of the way, and this one older guy, he's maybe 45, 50 years old. He's with a friend of his and probably his kid. He's like a 25-year-old guy. The guy skis past me, and he's like, hey, buddy, get out. I don't know if he cursed, but he was like, get out of the way or something like that. So then, you know, me, I'm fucking, I was like, all right, buddy, relax. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And then he goes, yeah, obviously. And then him and his friends laughed directly in my face.
It's like a ski move.
Oh, yeah, yes. One of those movies.
Like, these are the bad guys on the mountain now. Now you got to spend the whole rest of...
My uncle owns this resort.
Right. You spend the whole rest of your movie trying to get back
and
in it.
And they're laughing at his $1,900 gear.
Yeah. Dude, he laughed. They laughed so hard in my face. So as soon as I started laughing, I got, like, embarrassed, and I started feeling, like, hot in the neck. So I pulled my mask down, and I was like, yeah, motherfucker, how about I break your fucking jaw? And as soon as I said jaw, I slipped and fell again.
Jesus Christ.
Now the guys start cackling at me, and then they go, yeah, see you later, buddy, and then they zip down the fuck. No, then the guy goes, yeah, buddy, ski on or get peed on. That's what he said.
Oh, that's some white shit.
Ski on or get peed on.
That's about the extent of our rapping ability.
Black folks don't need to be in fucking ski slopes.
When he said that, that's when I was like, yeah, you're going to fucking pee on me, bro?
Yeah.
Then I slipped and fell.
You went full minority.
Then they laughed, and then they fucking zipped down the hill, and then but here's the problem. I'm still at the top of this fucking hill. Mm-hmm. Okay, and you can't take the ski lift back down. That's like a big no-no at ski resorts. So I'm sitting there, I was like, all right, I'm gonna fucking do it. 2-3 o'clock hits on this mountain, it's just a sheet of ice on top of everything. Like it's the slipperiest shit. And I drop in and I was like, all right, I'm going to go to the side stop and just make my way down slowly because this is way too advanced for me. And I couldn't stop. I go to the first side. All I just right. couldn't stop. And I'm like, all right, I'm going fast now. And I start speeding down this fucking hill, get terrified, and I slip. And the ski flies off my leg and goes in front of me, like lands maybe 8 feet in front of me.
It came off your boot?
It came off my boot.
Jesus Christ.
And then I started sliding down the hill on my thigh and ass, and I went right over the ski. And I went ba-boom, and my thigh has a big nasty bruise on it now. When I went over the ski, it broke the ski brake. So what, if you haven't been skiing before, when your skis are not on your feet, it has two things, like two prongs that go down from the ski that sticks in the snow so your ski doesn't slide off the mountain, right? So I broke the ski brake to where it wouldn't come up. So now when I put the ski on, I can't actually ski down the mountain. One of the thing has like prongs digging into it. So now I'm free. I'm on top of this mountain. I'm like, I'm going to fucking die, okay? So now I'm trying to stop
because
people.
You broke the ski with your ass.
My ass broke the ski. So I'm trying to stop people. They're zipping by me being like, get out of the fucking way. I'm like, please help. Somebody help me. I'm literally waving my arms for people to stop. Nobody's stopping. Everyone's just fucking furious that I'm creating an obstacle for them to have to ski around in a very, very dangerous situation. So finally, I was like, I got to fucking fix it. So I ended up breaking the ski brake the other way. I opened it and I pulled it up and I snapped it into the other place. So now it doesn't have a ski brake on it. Now it's just a ski that's going to slide. So I go to put it on. As soon as I put my foot on it, it just slips out from under my foot and just shoots down the hill. So now the ski is just shooting at warp speeds down the hill. I'm like, I watch it go into the woods, and I'm like, I'm fucking gonna die on a mountain right
That's
now.
That's why I snowboard now.
it was crazy. So then I take the other ski off, and I have to slowly walk down the hill in snow boots and set a slide on my ass. I go down to where it hits in the woods. Now, luckily, I just had to follow the track of one ski shooting off from the woods. So I just tracked my ski, and I finally got it. I put it back on, and then I made my way slowly but surely down. And that was like, I'm not meant
for
this.
And this is all by yourself.
It's all by myself.
So you can't have any fun with this.
Yeah, my girlfriend's blowing a ski instructor at the bottom of the hill. It was just...
You tortured yourself, bro.
The three guys are all pissing on her. I chose B.
So it fucking... the whole experience, I will say, though... It was really incredible. The feeling of going, you know...
Wait. When did you start having fun?
I had fun the whole time. It was just that was when I hurt myself and I realized that I was a little bit in over my head.
Yeah.
I hurt myself.
It's also funny that...
See if I could ski.
It's also funny that...
Three guys, they yelled at me. They told me they were going to pee on me.
But I loved the experience. I'm going to go again. I did not return my equipment. I did not return my or my gear that I purchased.
I thought you meant like the skis. Like you stole the skis? That would be the most Puerto Rican thing to do.
No, I returned them. But I will say I don't have the patience for like – I walked into the ski shop to return them. There was another guy in front of me like renting skis.
Yeah.
And I literally was like – yeah, can I just return these? And the guy was like, oh, let me just help him first. And then they started having a conversation about the type of skis. I was like – I just turned into a New Yorker. I was like, buddy, come on. What are we doing here? I got to fucking hand you these skis. That's it. I was like, all right, pal. And the other guy was like, no, he can go ahead. This is what white people act. I was like, this is, what is going on? Who has the patience to sit here and watch you fucking have a fucking lollygagging conversation about which skis you want? And it was
anywhere
crazy.
Anywhere outside the Northeast is like that. Their sense of urgency is non-existent.
Yeah. But it was, the whole experience was really cool. I will go again. I'm bringing my son, I think, in a couple weeks. We're just going to go somewhere a little more local and get him a ski lesson. And that was it. I loved it. It was a great experience. All right, real quick, let's thank one of our awesome sponsors on the show, which is Movement Watches, found on the belief that style should not break the bank. They've sold almost 2 million watches worldwide and bringing quality designs at fair prices. Zach, I'm telling you right now, my fucking Movement Watch makes me look like $1 million. They have really, really cool designs that are very unique. The American Muscle Car inspired Blacktop collection is my favorite.
They're sleek and classy without being like gaudy. Because sometimes you see people with like a nice watch and you're like, we get it.
Yeah.
These are just nice.
They're trying too hard, right? And I think that a good watch, a couple little accessories makes the difference. You could be wearing a pair of sweatpants. If you got nice sneakers and a nice watch on, you're like, all right, this guy must be important, right? He's wearing sweatpants to the fucking Grammys. He's a fucking man, right? This is what Movement will allow you to do. You can afford it. You don't need to spend thousands of dollars on a watch. You can look good while keeping it simple. All you got to do is go to their website, mvmt.com, and check out their incredible line of watches. They ship worldwide, obviously. They have new styles launching on their site all the time, okay? All that money you save, you can spend it on other things like drugs or gas digital subscriptions, right? Movement watches, I love them. Please go check them out. If you love this show and you support this show, go buy your watch from Movement Watch. You don't need to spend tons of money at the mall or fucking at your local watch store. And on top of them already having incredible prices, watches starting at just $95. We're going to give you 15% off today and free shipping and free returns if you don't like it. So all you got to do is go to mvmt.com/wrap. That's M as in Mary, V as in Virgin, M as in Mary, T as in Titties. .com/wrap. Check out their incredible line of watches, all their different styles, and save 15% off by specifically using that URL. Join the movement. Movement watches. All right, where were we?
Yeah.
You never been skiing at Zennhauser?
Sure, I went a couple of times. Yeah, it's you said it's not for fat people. No, not at all. Every time I went, I would always see, so when you're broke skiing, it's different than when you have a little bit of money in skiing, because yeah. I couldn't afford all that shit. I would have to rent the lowest, shittiest equipment. And then we went somewhere where it was, we needed a snowmaker because it was a hot winter.
Yeah.
And it was just sleet. There was no snow or powder. I think the white people call it powder.
Yeah.
It was just sleet. And I just remember just eating sleet for like an hour. And my ex-wife at the time, blowing guys and getting peed on. So, yeah. I don't know what it is about guys peeing on your women, but it happens.
Is that a regular thing that they say, ski on or get peed on? I Googled it afterwards.
Like, you really got so angry.
Is this a thing that people say?
Yeah, I feel like it's probably a bumper sticker in the neighborhood.
That's his thing. Because it wasn't in a movie. I Googled the quote. It came up. No, they were like, did you mean? I was like, no, ski on or get peed on. That's exactly what he said.
Like there's a decal of like Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes.
You're peeing on a skier that's fucking got his feet sticking out of the snow.
It was great for the moment. I mean, the guy was quick. I mean, I'm sure they were all talking about it that night. They were like laughing at you and they were like, remember when you said that ski on or get peed on to that new money?
Yeah, that's exactly what I am.
They call you new money? That's your nickname for the whole weekend?
Dude,
I hope they're there when you take your son. Like, I hope wherever place you end up going to, those same guys are there. Look who's back. You get bullied by richer white guys.
Reginald, take a look.
But I liked it so much, I stayed another day. We were supposed to leave after 2 days. I was like, let's stay a third day. Who gives a
good
shit?
Good for you. And probably got her wet, too. You know, you're like, hey, a little bit more money right there.
Hey, why not?
Yeah, you know? Nice. It's a good way to cement the relationship.
Yeah, you're becoming like those rom movies that we saw.
Shit, Harrington, go put money in my meter. Fuck!
Yeah.
Fuck my fucking butt! Fuck! Fuck, fuck, fuck!
He's not there.
I like to think that there's a world that exists
between
that,
fourth and fifth.
He's like the dad from Home Alone that we weren't 100% sure what he did. And, you know,
the dad from Home Alone.
Yeah.
The dad from Home Alone makes fucking bank.
He makes bank, but we don't know what he does, right? And, like, I feel like Lewis, you know what I mean? That's why they didn't really get into his deal, you know?
Yeah, that motherfucker took like 17 people to France.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fucking...
And first class tickets.
His whole fucking family to France.
He was so rich that they opened the door back up for him to get on the plane.
And they were all together. He wasn't trying to buy their love like you do on vacation.
You remember that? Like, they woke up late,
chartered
vans at the last second to get everyone there and held the plane. And we don't know what the fuck he did for a living.
Plus, you didn't see the other.
You remember in Home Alone 2 where he just got on the plane after he lost his ticket? That would not happen. They don't go like, you know, we trust you, kid. This is the plane. Get on.
We know who you
are. Plus, you can see the other half of the movie where it focuses on the father who is like, you know, he's getting, they find out he's embezzling all that money. And now he's got the head of the company is trying to get a hit on him, you know, and he's trying to figure everything out.
Well,
this whole thing.
I think in one of the drafts. Before they made it, Uncle Frank tipped off the robbers that was a rich house.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, usually is an inside
Uncle
job
Frank
like
was
that.
A scumbag.
Uncle
he
Frank
was
a cunt.
Child
oh, yeah.
So mean.
Yeah, it was so, like, I watched that movie with my son, like, when Macaulay Culkin comes in the room and he's recording him singing in the shower with the little recorder that became, like, the toy of the season to buy.
Boy. The Yak Back.
Yeah, he goes, he's like, get out of here, you little pervert, before I smack the shit out of you, or something like that. You're like,
yeah.
First of all, he's not trying to see your cock, bro. He's your fucking nephew. Second of all, yeah, he definitely threatened him with violence. I watched
multiple
that with
times in that movie.
I had to explain to my son what a pervert was.
Yeah. I mean, he was the one, when the whole shit happened, he goes, look what you did, you little shit.
Yeah.
That's the only cuss in the whole movie.
Yeah, he was not a very good example as an adult.
And maybe he wanted to see his cock. Maybe he's curious. So let him look at your cock. What's the big deal?
You're an uncle. Let him see your cock. That's what uncles do.
That's his cock you see. open it up a little bit. Be like, listen.
But also, I cover my cock in front of my son every. I don't want him to see what he's going to grow into. Like, wait. Just have your childhood. Have your years.
But everybody's
now.
Dead.
You don't gotta know.
Everybody's
you don't gotta know that this is the best to get, kid.
Everybody's father who wasn't murdered. Have you ever seen your dad's cock?
Yeah.
And it
haunts me. You seen your dad's cock?
Fuck yeah.
It haunts me.
It haunts you?
Why? My dad's dick looks like Alf's nose.
Yeah.
What is Alf's nose?
Alf's nose.
Can we mole on it?
Yeah, ask for a picture of Alf's nose.
Alf does actually have a penis face. That's his whole face.
I'm haunted by it.
Cause that's like overweight dick too. You're talking about those layers.
No, my
layers.
Dad's in good shape.
Those layers though.
No, that's the head of his dick. That's my dad has a big greasy dumb Italian.
And he's
dick.
He's got two holes.
it's horrifying.
Look at that. Look how Jewish he is. Can anybody ever take a moment to look at that Jew?
Yeah, he really he does. He sort of acts a little bit of nebbishy.
Yeah.
He eats cats. That's a Jew trait.
That's on Christmas for sure.
Right.
Hey, Willie, I'm a Jew. I'm a space Jew, Willie.
Oh, God.
Yeah, holy, what planet is he from?
Melmac.
Melmac. Why, you guys know a lot about fucking Melmac.
I was raised by the television.
It's a unifier, man.
All right, guys, let's take a quick second and talk about our newest sponsor, which is X-Vape. Look. You guys know, when I was smoking weed, I would just dab. I started dabbing exclusively, okay? And if you're going to dab, doing it with a blowtorch and a fucking dab rig, it's a little bit crazy. It's dangerous. I burnt myself on my dab rig
before.
There's
one thing you want when you get really high, it's to have an open flame.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be a fucking...
welder?
A welder in order to fucking...
an improv comic? You
gotta
professional broadcaster?
You got to be a fucking welder in order to take a dab these days. No longer do you have to do that if you have X-Vape. X-Vape makes the incredible Vista Mini 2, which is the ultimate electronic dab rig. It's a statement piece. It's a perfect size for your desk, coffee table, or on the go. It really offers a mind-boggling array of features only found in vaporizers that are priced for hundreds of dollars more, substantially less expensive. Dude, I don't want to say the name of it, but I bought one electric dab rig.
You spent a lot of money.
$300.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy, okay? This is a fraction of that price. They have tons of features on it. They have different heating settings for the style of dabs that you're actually doing. It's super, super easy to use. It's just $159, which is half the price of comparable dab rigs. It really is the best rig you're ever going to have your entire life. So what you got to do is you got to check out their website, which is xvapeusa.com. That's xvapeusa.com. And use the promo code GAS to save 10% off and free shipping. You get the Vista 2 delivered directly to your door for $145. That's fucking incredible. Trust me, if you guys have been in the market for an electronic dab rig, you know exactly the type of pricing that is. It's a way better deal. They have a bunch of other great items as well on the website, so you can check out their entire line of products. But once again, go to xvapeusa.com, use that promo code GAS, and save 10%. All right, where were we? Yeah, dude. My cock is not. It's not a. I can't call it a cock. I can't be like suck my cock. I have to be like suck my
dude.
Peener.
My dad had Alzheimer's. So I had to like take care of him the last couple of years.
I would just put a fucking pillow over his face instead of dealing with that.
Dude,
every day him forgetting me. I was like, just fucking let's end this.
But like having to pick my dad up and put him in the shower and then wash him, and this motherfucker was huge.
He had a his body was huge or his dick was huge?
His dick was huge, dude. Like, as a black man, it made me go like, wow, dude. Like, and it made me look at my mom a little bit different also. Yeah. But I understood. I understood why my mom cried when he died. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't talk to each other for years, dude. Like, they didn't fuck with each other at all.
Right.
When I let my mom know my dad died, she got hung up.
She thought she was going to have that dick just one more time. That was it.
Every time your mom buys eggplants, she gets wistful.
Yeah, man. That shit is it's brutal, man.
Dude, I don't remember my dad naked. I mean, he had to have a bigger dick than me. There's no way. He just had big dick energy.
I think with age, though, he gets bigger, too.
You think it does?
I think my dick is getting bigger as I get older.
I've been praying for it definitely has. My dick's definitely gotten bigger as I've gotten older. It just hangs a little bit more. Not like Anthony. Anthony's like, what?
Yeah, when does this happen? What? When does that happen?
When am I going to be a grown up?
But what if you look at your dad's? What if you look at your dad's dick and it's super smaller than yours, even as a kid? And you got your dad right there. You got him. You're just like, dude, I know I got the biggest dick in the house. What are you going to talk? What are you going
to
say to me?
That's one of the reasons why I think I'm glad I have daughters and I'll never have to worry about that. You know what I mean?
Your son having a bigger penis than you?
Yeah. I could probably deal with my daughter's, like, the concept that maybe one of my daughter's boyfriends has a bigger dick than me. But, like, it's not really my reality that I have to deal with. Like, your son in the house with you and he's just bigger than you.
I want my son to be bigger than me.
Good for you. That's a good attitude to have.
Can I have a ticket?
No.
Thank God.
Come on, that's a good attitude to have, for real.
Well, yeah, I don't want my son. Look, if my son does, I don't want him to grow up with a fucking small dick.
But what if he's like too big? Like women, like he's a fetish that women try once or twice and he'll never find real happiness.
That's a regular thing, by the way. Like women don't want too big of a dick. And I for years, I thought that that's what women would tell me to make me feel better about myself. But now that I've heard women speak candidly on the topic, there is such thing as too big.
Yeah.
You know?
Because that's the thing. Like, if your son is huge, right? And like,
get him in here.
He left, right? If he's huge and like, don't you kind of judge the chick that's with him a little bit differently? Like, you know, like you kind of go, hey, look, that's not the one you make a mother.
I mean, I remember my friend John Hickey in high school. He had this big, goofy dick. It was hilarious. It was such a big, fucking fat, misshapen cock. And we would have these little jerk parties. We'd all fucking get a porn and jerk off together. And fuck, we all did it. Shut up.
We all did it. Shut up.
You never jerked off with another boy?
Fuck no. Never. The closest thing, we watched porn together, but we all sat on different ends of the couches with pillows over our laps.
That's different with blacks.
Well, that's sort of a jerk party, right?
That's not a jerk party.
Listen, it's different with black people.
It's a jerk chicken party.
There's raging. I mean, do you think there's still raging homophobia in the black community, though? You think one of your friends might have been like, I wouldn't mind. Dude, if you take out your dick, I'll take out my dick.
I was dating this black chick for a little while.
Well, you know what? That might have existed, but it wasn't in my circles. And that's the thing. I'm learning that now as I get older. I'm realizing, like, oh, I definitely only ran with people whose energy matched up mine. Like, no matter where I went, because I wasn't even really fully aware that gay people existed until I was like 21. You know what I mean? Like, I knew it was a thing, and it was funny that there were some boys that were, like, a little bit weaker in the hood,
or in, like, that's very racist of me to just assume you grew up in the hood. Look, in the projects where you were growing up.
I grew up in a cul-de-sac. Nice suburban neighborhood. I cut grass on the weekend.
They went in the wilds of the jungle. Animals need to survive.
Well, I'm saying, like, where I grew up as well, like, it was poor people, whether it's white trash, the hood. Like, I grew up in, like, with a lot of Hispanic people. But, like, where I grew up, and especially in the time, 80s, 90s, there was way more people in the closet, you know? And it was, like, there was gay people, and I knew a couple gay kids, and you sort of had the idea, but everyone sort of hid it, right? So I think you just didn't experience it as much. It wasn't in your face as much. Now you go out and, like, dude, I was dating this chick for a while, the half-black chick, and we went to a Black Lives Matter march. I didn't go because of her. It went past my house.
Did you go half of the time or?
I was throwing rocks at them. Actually, that's why I went. It's like, get out of my neighborhood.
We'll go to half the march because you're half black.
It was going past my house. It was like very peaceful, and I was like, all right, I can support this because I talk so much shit about people protesting and fucking being violent and burning cop cars. They were going past my house, and I was like, you know, I was like, fuck it, I'll go out, and I'll fucking, at first it was just to fucking stand there and kind of observe it, but after a little while, we started walking with them, and it was just kind of nice to observe, more than anything else. Like, I wasn't like, it wasn't even about being in solidarity, it was more about, like, you know, I just wanted to see it firsthand, because you see what's on the news, you see what's in the media, you see both sides portraying it, and I was like, all right, well, I do believe that all people should be treated equally. I do believe that you shouldn't be fucking treating brown people like second-class citizens. Even though we make the jokes we make, like, no, that's the reality. So I went outside, and I remember, dude, it was in Harlem, and people were just chanting Black Lives Matter. Black, and I was like, all right, and everyone's chanting. And then at one point, somebody started a Black Trans Lives Matter. They're like, Black Trans Lives Matter. And then I watched half the crowd collectively go, what?
Yeah.
What the fuck did you do? What are we marching for right now?
I feel like that person's kind of trolling a little bit, though. They just want to watch the hypocrisy fold on itself.
It's, you know, not what I mean? White people that are killing trans people. It is other Black people that are like, ew, yo, we got to kill that person. What are we talking about? It's like, who's committing violence against trans people?
I don't know, because I've never done it.
It's not cops. Cops are not like, we got to go murder some Black trans people right now. No, it's people in the hood being like, ew, kill it.
All right, thanks, Officer Specific.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, see, when we examine stuff like that, I try to put myself in a position of, like, could I just...
kill a trans person?
Right. Could I just do that? Could I get behind that, right? Like, and
better
I'm
be
like...
in front of it. Damn, he's
and
quick.
The thing, I've been around people who've done some pretty fucked up shit, and I've never said anything or, like, intervened. You know what I mean? And that's probably... But I've never been around anybody who was doing that. Like, even, like, I grew up around people that, like, would do shit. Like, if you saw two gay dudes walking down the street, they might throw a bottle, right?
Yeah.
Now, here's the crazy thing that we all learned about that. The guy, be careful.
That's also a 40. That's a big bottle.
Right, right. But here's the thing. The person... There would be times where, like, a friend of mine would throw a bottle, it would crash at their feet, and the motherfucker turn around and come back. And guess what everybody did? They fucking ran. Because it's like, you realize, okay, you just threw a bottle at this motherfucker. There's eight of us over here, and he was like, what's up? And everybody ran off. So it's like one of those things where it's like, okay.
Ran from a gay guy?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I learned. Like, I'm like, oh, some of these people that do the shit.
Gay.
Some of the people who do that shit, they're the weakest motherfuckers in the world. You know what I mean? Because it's like, well, I'm not going to fight this guy because I didn't throw the bottle. I have no hatred towards him. You threw the fucking bottle.
Yeah,
go through, but the gay guy handled it, and that's the thing that I always look at it like in the hood. It was like even the gay dudes were tough. It was like, you know, it's not about being gay. Just stand up for yourself, and that you'll watch that motherfucker.
Well,
run.
Gay guys are always in. Here's the thing: what gay guys need to do is they need to just go get into some MMA classes instead of fucking taking spin classes or whatever. Use your time wisely. That's what I say. Okay, if you're gonna get in shape and you're gonna have fucking abs, because you see gay guys and they're like, you go through Chelsea. Guys are all muscular and fucking jacked. It's like, if those guys decided to just put their time into learning some martial arts, they would house people. They would,
yeah.
Once you've trained in any sort of martial arts or any sort of fighting, you realize, oh shit, cardio is probably the number one element that you need. You need to be able to actually go for a little while.
And breathe.
Most people cannot fight for more than a minute or two. That's the truth. You know, 2 minutes later, they're fucking gassed. That's that. Even after adrenaline kicks in. So it's, I think that you're probably seeing that more often. You see, but I think in...
But back then, kids were tough. Like, especially if you were gay, and I don't know if you guys ever believed this.
Gay kids in the hood are tough, and they usually can throw hands.
Right, and they're usually
because they got beat up or abused so much.
But they're also usually like brother number three, brother number four. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if
Dave
you guys...
Dave has an audition for that part later.
But you
I think
know,
that was Derek's role in King of Staten Island.
You guys ever heard... You guys ever heard of the Christopher Street Gays? It was no.
Gang. Down off the One Train and shit like that.
It was a gang in on the Lower West Side by Greenwich Village, right by where the Lantern was and stuff like that. There was a gang of gay Black kids, gay hood kids, and they would come. They would steal your shit.
They used to hang out at that McDonald's on West 3rd.
Right. Well, West 3rd Street was always
always fights in front of that McDonald's.
West 3rd Street McDonald's was always gay lesbian thugs and effeminate gay Black men, and they would just. Yeah, they would just throw down every night. They'd just be punching
each other.
We watched
so many fights from in front of the Fat Black Pussycat. That place was, it was a bad neighborhood. That was the first bad gay neighborhood, dude. Like, where gay dudes were starting trouble.
And Dave and I's entire friendship is based on the fact that we love watching Black people fight at fast food establishments. I think I was the one that brought you to Black People versus Fast Food.com.
Yes, I talk about that on stage.
Black People versus Fast Food.com is a website?
Yes.
It's a Tumblr, and the tagline is the funniest sentence I've ever read. Chicken nuggets, catnip for Black people.
Yeah, I talk about that on stage that you showed me that site, man, and people pull it up for the. It's funny, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really, my friends, even when I was hanging out with like more hood people, because I grew up on Railroad Avenue in West Harrisburg, New York, which was just fucking poor, a combination of poor black people, poor Puerto Ricans, poor white kids. It was all just one little block where it was like, it wasn't one racial makeup. It was sort of everybody. It was all just trash. And our crew was definitely diverse. But none of my friends, even the fucking like more thuggy ones, they just weren't the kids to go and attack a gay guy.
Right.
They just didn't fucking...
It's not as common as you think.
Yeah.
And when it is there, like I say, when I'm describing it in that situation is, we sniffed it out pretty quick that the guy who's like that, he's a bitch.
Yeah.
So he has no influence over the rest of us to start treating someone like that.
It was almost like, here's the thing, like we never, the term faggot was never used for gay, even as a kid. It wasn't used for gay people. It was used to just describe somebody who's being a fucking pussy or a bitch or whatever it is. And it's like,
and it's just a word that gets a big reaction.
It's just
taking out a better weapon.
But it still describes a gay dude also. Yeah. Like you're not going along with the plan.
Well, I think in like, because you listen to like Eddie Murphy Delirious, and you know, he's like, so faggots, they'd be crazy. Like, I think that's in like the 70s and 80s. I think they would just, that would be a term that was sort of derogatory and they would throw it out. But by the time the 90s hit, like nobody was ever calling, I don't know of anybody who was like, yo, look at that faggot over there. Like, it just was never used for that reason. I never really, my mother was sort of fucking woke for her time, you know, even though she was a fucking drug addict psycho who beat the fuck out of me.
Those are the kind of people who are woke.
But she, like, my mom,
yeah,
like,
a jostler a few times.
Oh, man.
Come on, we got to march today.
But yeah, she, we just never, like, my mom was sort of like, just progressive in the sense that, like, you know, she had gay friends. I mean, look, I think my mom might have had AIDS. Who knows? But she definitely, we were always just sort of taught that fucking, you know, you just don't do that. You don't fucking trash somebody for their sexuality or the color of their skin. Like, even though, to be honest with you, my mom was sort of racist, but she was like, we drive through Havistraw and there'd be like a Puerto Rican would like walk in front of the car. She's like, move your spick ass out of the way. And so mad because...
That's just single mothers in general, though.
Yeah. But you sort of realize, like, that's what's built into me. Like, if I'm in my car, I'm so racist when I'm in my car. Like, if there's a Chinese guy in front of me, oh, you should hear the things I say if he's going slow. I mean, Christ almighty. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I mean, when I get angry, if I stub my toe, I'll just scream out racial epitaphs. Like, I really...
Just say it. You say the N-word constantly.
I started saying the N-word when I stubbed my toe as a joke, but now it is kind of what I do. Like, it's just, it's easier to do that than go, ow.
Dude, I'll give you a pass.
You're right. There's no other better word to say than when you stub your toe than the N-word. Dude, I don't know.
And I'm saying, and you know what it is, dude? The hard R.
Yes.
The hard
R. Oh, fucking murder. Oh, my fucking toe.
I can't validate this on Martin Luther King Day, guys.
But it's not racist. No black person involved with me stubbing my toe. It's just the word that comes out.
If you've ever had a cat knock a full drink off the table and you're not calling it the N-word,
it's you and Ani DeFranco.
Why can't we just simply redefine that word?
Yeah, it's a great word.
It's such a good word that it's nothing to do with black people for me.
It's not expressing hate on a one specific little thing.
Oh, shit.
Then it's an amazing word.
It's an ugly word, and the reason I'm saying is because I need to express ugliness.
So there's the history of curse words just went up on Netflix.
Ooh, I did see that. I feel like that's meant for kids to watch.
My son
wanted to watch it so bad. I'm like, no.
It was pretty funny, but they do a thing where people have their hands in ice water, and it's a study, and they show it that you can keep your hand in the ice longer if you can curse.
Yeah. I believe that.
Because whatever endorphins those words give you makes you last through.
It's like scream therapy,
the
right? So if I'm like just yelling and expressing yourself through that, like it feels good. You feel like you're releasing something. And it's the same thing when you say a curse word in a moment of anger, you feel this release and you're like, fuck. And that's exactly the point. Like, I don't know why. But if I stub my toe, I don't think I've ever not said the N-word, but I stub my toe.
Yeah.
If you stub your toe and you go, African-American dick, it doesn't work. It doesn't have the same
We're
effect.
We're all created equal.
Indigenous people of this country's big.
Yeah.
Dr. King Zeus, come a troop.
And it also makes sense.
I have a dream. I have a dream. Oh, remember, created equal. It's not the same.
Sitting where you want on the bus.
Goddamn. So,
happy Martin Luther King Day, everybody.
Yeah, man.
Happy
Martin Jesus Luther King Christ.
Day. He had a dream.
I read every Martin Luther King Day, I go down a rabbit hole and I read his speech. It's a nice speech.
He was a good
dude. I went to Memphis last year. I was doing a gig and I saw the hotel where his assassination was. Mm. Yeah, that shit. I didn't think that would mean anything to me until I actually like saw it, right? And I'm like, holy shit. But you know what else fucked me up a little bit? They got the two cars still there. Up underneath of the balcony where he was standing, the ones that him and that they were riding, two Cadillacs, and those motherfuckers, they look bad. Like now, like you look at that shit, like God damn, that's a fly ass motherfucker. Like I don't understand. That's a lot of attention to draw to yourself. I could see motherfuckers being mad at that black guy driving around a Cadillac in the South, like talking to motherfuckers that way.
Did Martin Luther King have money?
I think so. That's what I'm saying.
He must have, right?
Those are two.
He got a lot of pussy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, he cheated on his wife all over the place.
He was non-stop, right? Dog. Yeah. I mean, and I'm telling you, the Cadillacs in front
I
of that
have a dream
hotel.
To fuck different pussy than this old bitch.
Those Cadillacs are nice, man. Yeah. And it, like, they could have gotten any other.
I'm going
seat.
Out and I'm getting brain tonight.
Jesus Christ.
He was a Martin Luther King Jr. was an American Baptist minister, humanitarian activist, and leader who had a net worth of equal to $250,000 at the time of his death. That's not that much.
You know what? That also might be.
What? In the 68? That's not a lot?
No, but that's just after that's adjusting now. For that's inflation.
For yeah.
But
oh, he was hood rich.
So he. No, but he might have had assets from the church, from other people.
Like, but he also might have been like Jesus, where he don't really need money. Because any city he go to, he good. Like, who's not going to put him up? Who's not going to cook for him? Who's not going to give him some pussy?
He turned water into Old E.
Was that a thing back then?
Old E.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, because at that point, you don't need money. You're good. You create value wherever you go. So motherfuckers, yeah, see them two Cadillacs out there?
Is that where you used to fuck? Oh, that's the assassination hotel.
Yeah, they still got him. Look, those are nice cars now.
You just got to remember, he was a doctor. He had a PhD in some sort of theology.
PhD in hip hop music.
So what you
he's
saying?
Like Dr. Dre.
Yeah, he's like Dr. J. Yeah, yeah.
So you saying like he was the first Cosby? He was already a successful doctor, killing it.
Well, he must have for a black guy to go to college I would imagine in the 50s. That's a big deal, right? I mean, it was a big deal for a guy to be a doctor.
He received his doctorate in systematic theology.
Yeah, which he plagiarized his doctorate, and technically he's not really a doctor. But
nice.
But he was a doctor.
I like that, to hear that hustle it through the system, you know? Figure out the fucking game.
Yeah, I mean, what do we even know about Dr. Martin Luther King? You just know that the speech, he was for peace, Malcolm X was for violence. This is what I took from a
this
kid.
That's the narrative we are taught, but when you go back and look at like old political ads,
yeah,
it would be like Martin Luther King being like, "We march for peace," and behind them, like cities burning.
Mm-hmm.
Like but they tried. Just... They the propaganda at the time was that he was responsible for a lot of violence and a lot of like riots.
Really,
now we are taught he was the side of peace. The best way to explain it is the X-Men.
Yeah.
Magneto is
Malcolm X.
Malcolm X and
Professor
King
X.
Is Professor X.
Yeah.
You know what? I always looked at those more as like the gays. Like Professor X was like the conservative gays, and Magneto was more the loud, flamboyant gays.
But Stan Lee said it was those two. It was those two. But then I can see where you go because the whole mutant thing.
Yeah.
I think that was also kind of eventually in the storyline.
Was mutant? His mutant power was his fast twitch.
He slam a basketball.
Bonefoot.
He runs faster than any X-Man.
Right off the top.
Let's take a minute and thank our incredible sponsor, YoKratom.com, YoKratom.com. I love YoKratom. They support this show. They support the whole network. They support Skankfest, my entire fight training camp. I mean, holy shit, they are in the business of Luis J. Gomez, and I am in the business of YoKratom. I'm talking to the people that are over the age of 21 years old. If you're already in the market for Kratom, as a lot of you guys are, get it from YoKratom.com. They deliver it directly to your house. It's wholesale prices, so they have a $60 kilo, which is goddamn near unheard of.
You don't have to go to a gas station or a smoke shop to buy your kratom. You probably notice it. Every gas station you go to, you see little kratom pills now, little bags of kratom. It's basically legal heroin. What do you want me to say? There's no other way to describe it, okay? I don't take it anymore because I'm going to become a junkie if I keep on taking it. But Shannon's a kratom junkie, and we love her for it. Right, Shannon? How much do you love your kratom?
The best.
They really are, okay? Best quality kratom in the world. Best price per milligram. Garen motherfucking teed. Go to yokratom.com, yokratom.com, and spend $60 on a kilo. Try out their incredible products. And yeah, that supports us directly. So yokratom.com. All right, where were we?
So let's, real quick, let's get some plugs out of the way. We haven't done plugs yet. Shannon, hit that plug music. Temple, what's up, kid?
Wait for the music.
There you go.
Because once the music drops, that means the people are listening.
It's professional.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. All right, guys. My first comedy special, the second one, is available on my website, DaveTempleComedy.com, or on all streaming platforms. Check me out as the new co-host of No Need for Apologies here on GasDigitalNetwork.com, Wednesdays, 1 p.m., right after Real Ass Podcast. And check me out Tuesdays and Thursdays, Unpopular Opinions, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Instagram Live. Follow Consider This Comedy.
Zenhauser.
All right. Well, I got my Creepy Corner podcast, The Creepy Corner. You can check it out on creepycorner.nyc. You can check us out on Twitter and Spotify. And if any big-time podcast affiliate wants to pick us up, hey, well, hello.
Zach Amico.
Instagram, Zach is not funny. Check out my other show in the network, Zach Amico's Midnight Spook Show. Fridays at midnight, comics talking shit while we watch a movie. Black History Month coming up. Proud to announce for Black History Month, I have a co-host, Pockets. Will be Pockets Graham will be my co-host for the entire Black History Month. Hopefully I'll get Dave on to watch Killjoy 3, which is now a spook show tradition.
Yes.
As we watch the Killjoy series and Catalyst Wrestling.
It's Saturday all spook shows during Black History Month.
Spook shows.
Catalyst Wrestling Saturday mornings at 11 a.m. also here on the Gas Digital Network. And I'll be on the road with Lewis this week and in February.
Hell yeah, dude. We got a couple gigs coming up if you guys are listening live or if you're listening on iTunes this weekend. excuse me, the 20th or the 23rd of January. Myself, Zach Amico, Chris from Brooklyn, Mike Cannon, all going to be down at Uncle Vinny's Comedy Club in South Jersey. Make sure you guys come and support. Also, we're going out to fucking Texas, Houston, Texas, the 12th of February and the 14th of February. We're skipping a day because the 13th will be in Lafayette, Louisiana. I know it's a little crazy. The way we're doing things are a little bit wacky. But the 12th, we have two stand-up shows, me headlining with Zach Amico as well as a special guest. 13th, Lafayette, Louisiana, myself and Zach Amico.
And then we turn right back around.
We go to, but what we're doing on the 14th is we're doing a showcase, which Zach is going to headline on the 14th.
Oh, good.
It's a showcase, though. So you're fucking, it's going to be a few other comics, all dirty comics. And then included with that same ticket price, we're doing a live Real Ass podcast taping in Houston. So make sure you guys grab tickets for all of those shows and support us. Obviously, you guys are listening to Real Ass Podcast. You should know that I do 4 podcasts now on the network. Legion of Skanks, Believe You Me, Real Ass Podcast. And now Gomez Watches Seinfeld with my sister, who I've been having so much fun doing the show with. If you guys want access to the premium side of Gas Digital, which gives you the entire on-demand library for all the shows that we do. We get the latest 15 episodes on iTunes and YouTube. But if you want access to everything uncensored and ad-free, plus pre-release on all new episodes, use the promo code RAP. Get a 14-day free trial. You get access to everything. If you guys don't like the premium service after 14 days, just cancel. You can just download everything and then cancel. You don't even have to keep the membership, but go do that. Use that promo code RAP. Also, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Leave us a review. One reviewer every month we give away a free piece of merch to. And you can get all of our merch at podcastmerch.com. Podcastmerch.com, home of the best podcast merch on the planet. Anything else? What?
Your Twitch?
Twitch.tv/PRRattlesnake. Just gave away an Oculus on Friday night. So if you guys follow me, I'm going to be doing giveaways randomly all the time. I'm going to be doing giveaways every single month. Guaranteed. Give away my Oculus. How have you been enjoying your Oculus?
It's cool.
Have you jerked off to VR porn yet?
No. It's on the docket.
Yo, have you guys played the game Comedy Night in there yet?
No.
It's just basically like a stand-up comedy club, but like everyone's avatar takes different turns going on stage and trying to joke for a minute.
It sounds horrible.
It's so funny, though, because it's just people just being, they're bad at comedy, and they just go racist.
So everybody in the room is a real person, and it's an open mic?
Right, but they circulate the people in the room. So it's basically like a chat room. Like I think like 16 people fit in the club at a time.
An avatar.
Right. Yeah. And it's fun. It's just silly to me. I love it. I love when people struggle with comedy and they just yell the N-word. It's just fucking hilarious.
How much time do they get at a time?
Everybody gets a minute at a time.
Okay.
Yeah. Anybody, like, trailer of the game if you want
to see it. I would love to see it, please. Everybody download this now. It sounds very fulfilling.
Yeah, that's how it is. Yeah, you're a superstar.
Do you think you are fun? Can you entertain the crowd? Dan Soder.
Yeah.
Is Dan Soder the video game? Really?
But yeah, you can hear like the audience laughing or not laughing or booing you, telling you suck. You know, it's pretty.
But is the audience, are they real people? Or...
It's other people, it's other VR people.
That's amazing.
Compete against other comedians. Oh, roast battle. Hell yeah. N-word!
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty silly, man. It's fun, though, to go in there and just fuck around. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
All right. I dig it.
I don't know why they tried to make it way sexier than it is.
You see, the black avatars run the light. You've been on for 25 minutes.
Yeah, man. White guys don't run the light?
Well, we do.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we've all run the light. Right?
Who is the most arrogant up-and-coming white comic? Like, who?
What Shane Gillis.
Shane Gillis has black comic energy?
Shane Gillis is the most arrogant person I've ever met in my entire life.
Yeah?
It's fucking wild. I mean, have some humility, Shane. Holy fucking shit. I have to constantly remind him. I was like, Shane, who the fuck do you think you are? Are you out of your fucking mind? What do you think is going on here? You just got famous. It's fucking crazy. I've never met somebody more arrogant. Shannon, am I wrong about this? Shannon says it. She's like, God, he's cocky.
Yeah.
Shannon talks shit about Shane behind his back.
It works.
No, not shit. But like, for example, with the awards show, like he was a real diva about it.
Legitimately a fucking diva. Like I've been working so hard at this for so long, and I don't know. I was just taught to think that I stink at all times. Like I just came from a lineage of comics who all believe that they stink. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and
I think
that made us better. And it's almost like Shane Gillis was raised by the black comedy scene. He was like, yo, I'm the shit, motherfucker. Yeah. Look at my sneakers.
But Shane also, like, it's not like he's new to the shit. So he went through the period of thinking he stinks already. He just didn't do that.
I don't think
here
he did. I don't think Shane has ever thought that he stunk.
His look is off-putting to me. He looks like...
A giant retard?
He looks like what would happen if a child really made a wish on a video game in an amusement park. And he woke up the next day.
I wish I was big and retarded.
Right. He'd just be like a large child.
Yeah.
Have you seen my mommy?
I love Shane. I do love him.
I think that's also because of his size, though. Like, you know, like, you can't push him around. You know what I mean? And I think that's the other thing.
I'll beat the fucking shit out of Shane Gillis. Mm. I don't care how big he is. I don't care how much he played football in high school. Suck my fucking dick.
Shane looks like he can take a punch, man.
Doggy.
Like, he seems like you'll wear yourself out trying to hurt him.
He literally has no chin. It's a little tiny mouth that goes into his neck. Trust me. You fucking crazy?
I don't know him personally, but
I love Shane. Shane's one of my best friends, but I have to remind him constantly that he's not a dick. I was like, what are you doing? Who the fuck? Who are you? What is going on? Are you a cunt? Is that what it is?
I think it comes off fast. Because I watched him do that shit one night to Vaughn DiCarlo at the Stand, where she said something. I was talking to him and she inserted herself based off of something that he said to me as far as like whether he can spot whether someone is racist or not. It was something weird like that. And she, what about me? What about me? And he goes, I can see that you're a cunt. And he said it like really fast and really confident.
That's just funny.
Right. And she was blown away.
And not untrue.
Right. And that's why I'm like, dude, like, yeah, that to me is so, it seems so confident. I don't even think he thought it out that well. I think it just flew off and he didn't back down from it. So he just looked totally badass doing it, you know? Yeah.
That's the kind of instincts you need in this business.
It's true.
It is. You came up thinking you stank, right? But what point did you say to yourself, oh, I'm doing all right?
A month ago.
I'm pretty good.
Yeah. One month ago was the first time I was like, you know what? You know what? I'm doing okay now.
Yeah.
But it's like...
But he bought snow pants with comedy money.
Yeah, bro. I've been there, though. I used to have to tell myself that. Because I thought I was nothing in this business for a long time. And then I would go home to my family where my kids are sleeping in their beds that I paid for and be like, not that I think you're okay. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like you're not giving yourself credit.
Well, like, I grew up loving, like, Attell, right? And, like, fucking, like, if you ever talk to Attell after he gets off stage, like, he'll be like, I bombed, I stink, I'm horrible. And you're like, you're the greatest comic alive. Like, what are you talking about? And he just, like, it's like, no, I'm a hack. I stink. Like, that's just sort of like, so, and I was just sort of taught, when I was coming up under, like, guys like Big J and Nate and Metzger and all these guys.
Humility, sure.
Yeah, they all had that attitude, like, oh, shit, I'm not shit. Like, you know. And then eventually you sort of grow into something that's okay. And you go like, all right, well, I'm not bad. But in a weird way, like, even saying out loud, like, oh, I'm a great comic, I'm the shit, it just comes off as really fucking douchey.
Sure.
You know, it's like, I think you need to sort of, I just have like, I'm more self-deprecating. Like, I hang out with the best comics in the world. You know, not you guys, but like, I hang out with, like, the guys who I came up with or the guys that I would always hang out with. It was always the absolute funniest guys, and I would always compare myself to that. And, you know, to this day, I still compare myself to Patrice or Attell or just the absolute best comics in the world.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
No, but I think you have to, because you keep on trying to get better. If I start comparing myself to comics that have been doing it as long as me or younger comics,
then you'll be right where you need to be.
No, but
you're
should
nowhere near Patrice.
Yeah, but that's not Attell. Of course. I know you're 100% right about that, but I'm constantly getting better because I'm comparing myself to those guys.
No, you're not.
To the this
fact,
day.
The fact you're that not you getting better, Lewis.
Cut Dave's mic. Get off the fucking show. He's off the show.
The fact that you listen. Anybody who can make a living out of telling jokes on stage, I think you're doing a great job, no matter what. I mean, if you can make a living being a stand-up
day, bud,
comic.
One day.
Nah, listen, I just want to be remembered on a fucking podcast when I do a podcast. Do you know how insulting that was when I came on? I'm like, oh, man, I killed it the last time I was on here.
We all went, oh, yeah, the cup of spit.
They remember the cup of spit, but they don't remember me. But that's my own fault. You know, I got to say more racist shit and scream more. Yeah. And have a little bit more of a gimmick, I think, you know, because I'm not a fantastic comic like Attell or Patrice, but I can hold my own on stage.
You're a very funny comic.
Well, and I appreciate that.
But that's,
thank
once
you.
Again, you have humility.
You guys are all funny too, though. But I mean, we're around funny people.
Yeah. The thing is, like, whatever. I mean, funny is like.
But just killers, man. Like, we came up with killers. Every one of us in New York City, this is the NBA of comedy. When you come up on stage, you are competing against guys like, you know, Alexandro, Tell, you know.
Did you put Ted Alexander in the same category as David Tell? And I love Ted. Like, I think Ted's a great comic, but, you know.
Well, he's I think he's a great comic.
He's a great comic. He's not, I wouldn't be afraid to follow Ted. Like, you know, like. Big J is a tough follow.
Sure,
Mike Britt, even guys you haven't heard of, Mike Britt, Mike Yard, these guys are tough follows. They fucking level a room to the point where you're like, I don't want to go after that guy. But
Godfrey.
Godfrey is like, you do not want to follow Godfrey. It just sucks because he has this energy and he's so animated
he's
and
so
funny, so likable. And then you go up and you're doing this curmudgeon fucking dickhead act. And it's but it took me a while to accept that. Like, not killing the same level as Big J, it's you can still be a killer. You know what I'm saying? Like, Kurt Metzger doesn't kill like Big J kills, but a lot of people would watch Kurt and Big J and they go, oh, I prefer Kurt because he's doing is just a different style, like really heady jokes. So it depends on what's important to you. I think that in general, somebody who's going to a comedy club who's not going as a fan of somebody, they just want to laugh as hard as possible. So I've always sort of wanted to kill the same way Big J kills. And to be honest with you, it's just that muscle, whatever it is, that somebody can kill that heavy, it just doesn't exist in me. I'm not like, I'm never going to kill the same way Big J kills. He fucking loves. I mean, there's been times where I'm like, oh, I had a killer set front to back where I murdered and I leveled the room. But there's always going to be some awkward moments in my set. There's always going to be moments where I'm making the audience feel uncomfortable. And the quicker I accepted that that's my style, you know what I'm saying, the more I became confident in what I do. Because it doesn't always have to be fucking laughs per minute, like just destroying a room and everyone's fucking stomping up and down. Sometimes they want to go, oh shit, that made me feel uncomfortable. Oh shit, that's awkward. That style of comedy, I mean, you look at Attell or you look at Kurt, like those are the guys that like, they take those awkward moments and they sort of use it as a moment to jump off of and be funny. But sometimes you have to fucking make people feel uncomfortable.
Right. And it's
Patrice is another example because Patrice killed. Okay. But Patrice, every set.
Patrice walked a lot of rooms, though.
There was a moment in every Patrice set that I've ever seen where the audience was uncomfortable as fuck. Right. And they were like, oh shit. And then he would dig himself into a hole purposefully just to dig himself out of it. Mm-hmm. And it was that much more impressive. So that's a different style of comedy. And I had to sort of accept my style, because in the beginning, you're just trying to emulate all that. You're like, you're trying to kill as hard as possible. You're doing an impression of your favorite comics.
Yeah.
And then eventually you sort of like, oh shit, I have my own style. I'm my own guy. I have my own voice. And that takes a decade. Literally, it takes a fucking decade to figure that out.
Sure. And the main thing is failing and not getting spots and fighting for
spots. You're killing it in that regard, dude. I mean, I've never seen somebody fail or not get spots better than Anthony Sundance.
We're all laughing at this, but that's the God's honest truth. I have the worst luck as a stand-up comic.
Get in the Guinness Book of World Records any means necessary.
The biggest failure in comedy.
I gotta pee. You guys take over for a second. I'm dying. This is a new thing that I do where I pee on the show every week. Zach, it's time for Lewis to gotta pee. You're hosting it.
Dad, we're just watching Lewis disintegrate.
Welcome to Lewis Has to Pee.
How you feeling?
You would think it would be you that has to get up and go to pee regularly.
Oh, no, that's just 8 times a night.
The diabetes kicks in.
I'm an old diabetic man.
Jesus Christ, man. I'm working on a plantar fasciitis.
Take a fucking seat.
Oh, shit. It's the Irish boy wonder. What's going on? Colin Terrell just walked in.
What's up, doggies?
How you doing, man?
Are you here to do a show, or you're here just to do your football
play? I love Pokemon. Every episode, nigga.
Oh shit! No, you did that on purpose.
Yes. What's up?
Nothing, man.
What
Happy
are you doing
New Year, brother?
I'm the realist.
What's going on? Nice to meet you. I'm Anthony.
I'm the
Anthony,
realist.
How are you, man? Welcome. We got a great show today. What's going on?
What are you hanging out?
Happy New Year.
Yeah, I'm trying to fucking sell those Super Bowl boxes.
All right, you got me, buddy.
Yes, I came in to sell.
Remember, we talked about that because you were like, I was like, I can't do this gambling. And you're like, this isn't fucking gambling, man.
It's not gambling. It's luck. It's not.
It is gambling, motherfucker.
It's a raffle. It's more like a raffle.
You really depend on your accent when you said luck.
Oh, hoity-toity-toity, it's not a gamble. It's just a bit of luck.
Crushing it. What's going on? What are we talking about?
We're talking about your fucking gambling ring that you're putting together.
I came in, Lewis is giving you all pointers on comedy.
Yeah.
I bomb for a reason.
Yeah.
That's just my style.
If you try someone who sucks.
He goes, I used to copy all these good comics and I realized I wasn't one of them.
You're just a conglomeration of all the best comics. I'm like, that's not what you are, Lewis.
I use the silence.
I'm like a mixture of Attell, O'Neill, you know.
You ever see when Patrice is bombing? That's me the whole time.
Patrice used to walk rooms, though, right? Like, because I wasn't around for most of Patrice. Were you guys, like, around for more Patrice shit?
Nah, not live. I've been in a room for Patrice a few times, but by the time I came, when I first started coming to New York, he died a few months later.
I know he was banned at comedy clubs. Like, he couldn't perform at Caroline's for a while. He couldn't perform at, I think it was, like, Stand Up New York. Like,
I think he got banned from the Cellar for a few weeks.
Yeah, they used to ban the shit out of him because he was such an asshole. He was constantly being an asshole, but he was so goddamn funny. He's one of those guys where a lot of comics in this city, they're so likable. Like, that was the thing. Everybody's friends. Hey, oh, you had a great set. Oh, thanks, buddy. It was okay. You know, like all the Mark Normans and stuff like that. They're just nice guys and you like them. But, like, you know, 20 years ago, everybody was a dick. Everybody was a cunt to each other. Like, Brennan was a big, But I mean, like, all the guys in the Cellar, they were just all cocksuckers.
Patrice took the soul out of my body when I met him.
What do you mean?
My manager at the time took me to Caroline's to see Patrice.
Oh, yeah.
They were hanging out after. Patrice was having dinner. And they were having a conversation, and I just was young and ballsy, and I, like, started talking like I was part of the conversation. And Patrice just looked at me with that scrunched up face, and he goes, who's this loud nigga who thinks he can talk to me? He was my favorite comic in the world.
And he just crushed you.
I walked home in the rain.
Crying. Jesus Christ. Not.
See, that's what happened to me and Todd Lynn. I wasn't a fan of Todd Lynn, but my first year as a comic, I was working. I was at the Comedy Village, and Todd Lynn was talking to the manager at the time, whoever it was, and I said something. I kind of tagged his shit, and that's when you know you don't tag other comedians' shit when they're making jokes and stuff, unless like you're friends with them or you know them pretty well. He looked at me and he was like, "Who this motherfucker think he was tagging my shit? Stupid ass white motherfucker!" Like, he was like getting landed into me.
That just means it was good.
He was just
seriously like when black people.
Todd Lynn was a cunt.
Was crazy.
When he died, I was like, "Cool, my wishes came true." No, thank fucking God. He went blind and died. I prayed for that moment in my life for years.
The last few months, Todd would get up on stage. They would bring him up after the headliner at CB's, and somebody would walk him on, and they'd be like, "Guys, just you know, if you want to stay, we do have one more act for you." And somebody would walk him on stage. He couldn't use one of his arms, I think.
Yeah, he had a chicken arm. He had one of those tiny arms.
He had a tiny arm, and he's blind. And then they would just point him at the audience so he knew where they were. And then he would mumble into the mic as people shuffled out and paid their bills.
I hated Todd Lynn. I hated
Jesus
him.
Jesus Christ.
I hated him. I'm
thinking about like someone doing you that much of a favor to give you stage time. Like you have at least one friend left in the business.
He was just such a cunt to me. Like, here's the problem. Here's the problem. Okay, when I first started in comedy, I was producing shows, and this is before producing shows was cool. Like people produce shows stunk back in the day. 15 years ago, like I was, and now everyone and their mother has a fucking show at some bar or whatever it is.
Goddamn right.
But back in the day,
it was affiliated with buying yourself stage.
Yes, right, exactly. Right.
Lewis was the original Sheba Mason.
I had a lot of confidence because there was a couple things that happened. I was doing shows and I figured out the tricks, right? I figured out how to do well in front of an audience without any jokes. Like if you're smart, you could sort of figure it out, right? So I would do well and then nobody would tell me that I stunk because they wanted stage time on my shows. So I walked around with this confidence that I was bringing so many people into these comedy clubs because I ran street teams in New York City. So I had a real confidence and I understand that. I understand why if you're a veteran comic who didn't need my fucking stage time, but Todd was one of the first people that was like, yeah, fuck this guy. And he was kind of shitty to me. He was really shitty. And I'm just not a guy that takes somebody being shitty very well. You know, it's like if you start being a dick to me, I don't give a fuck what your status is. I'm not one of these guys that I'm like, oh, I have to. So me and Todd would fucking literally butt heads and I would threaten to beat him up and I'd be like, I'll fuck you up with one hand, motherfucker. Mm-hmm. It literally got like that. I remember one time me and him were going to fight and Rich Voss was going to be like, yo, he's just fucking with you. And I was like, I don't care. I'm going to fucking beat up this old man.
Mike DiStefano used to fucking get into fights with him all the time. And he almost punched him one time and Vecchio like stopped him.
Big J almost beat him up too one time. Big J was like, I'm going to beat your fucking ass. Yeah. But everyone had problems with Todd Lynn. And like, look, I'm sure he was great. I know a lot of friends. I have a lot of mutual friends who are like, no, Todd's like a great, you know, but he was really fucking shitty to me. And I don't know. I just didn't. Yeah. He didn't have the status where I was like, whereas like Patrice. Patrice did it in a way where it would come off like ball busting. It came off
vaguely endearing.
Yeah. It came off like, oh shit, Patrice is trashing me. Bobby's trashing me. Noren's trashing
Voss.
Me. Voss, all these guys, they do it in a way where you're like, oh shit, like I can tell that they like me. Fucking Todd Lynn did it in a way where it was like, oh, this guy's actually shitty. This guy's actually not being cool. So I fucking hated that guy up until the day he died. And you know,
I never had the problems with other comics. I never took the shit too personally. Like some people may rub me the wrong way when I first meet them, but I don't let that deter me. Like you were like that when I first met you. Like, you were cool as shit when I first met you. Remember, we were with Pete Davidson, and we smoked out in his Jeep together. And then, like, every time I saw you after that, you were, like, really cold. But I think you were just high and didn't have any idea who I was.
A lot of people, that's exactly what it is. A lot of people think that, here's the thing about me. I have a shit memory, and I don't remember people's names. So if I end up shutting down in a weird way, I feel bad because I don't remember their name. So I'll ignore people that I've met before.
And it's, like, fucking weird because it's, like, you would literally go to Lewis and be like, hey, what's up, man? And he would, like, kind of go out of his way to get away from you. And you'd be like, the fuck is the matter with this kid? You know what I mean? And that was it. Like, but every time I saw him, and I think the only thing that allowed me to keep going with you was you were consistent. There was, like, three times that you were just, like, that way. And I was like, I think he's just that way.
So I was friends with Dave for 3 years, and one time I brought him on stage as Jordan Temple.
He was looking at your sneakers. Yeah, I think
we've known each other for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's my problem is like, if I don't remember your name, I'd rather ignore you than say hello.
And that's the thing. My first time meeting you, I'm in the back seat of a Jeep being passed a joint.
Yeah.
So we're just smoking in a car headed uptown.
Yeah, it's simple not really as that. And I think a lot of people think that I'm an asshole because I'm also very antisocial. So when I'm in my own world, like I run a podcast network and we fucking, you know, now we have, you know, all of these things that sort of happen around our world. Skankfest, people see me at Skankfest, they're like, oh shit, this guy's like the life of the party. If I go to like an industry party or if I go to like a and I'm hanging out at a comedy club, I don't talk to people. I'm by myself. I get in my head. I'm like, you know, and a lot of the reason is because I forget everybody's names and I feel really awful if I forget your name. It's just such a fucked up. Bonnie McFarlane, I think, used to have a joke about it. She was like, you feel this anxiety if you forget somebody's name, but that person should try to be more memorable. Yeah, I just have this thing where I sort of shut down. I become very antisocial. That's where I'm like, I'm a little bit on the spectrum because like I won't make eye contact with people. If I'm in an environment where I'm not comfortable, I'm just sort of in my own head and in my own world. And I've had a lot of people be like, oh, that guy's a fucking dick. Why is he ignoring me? I'm like, dude, I don't even remember meeting you. And it's not a them problem. It's because I did smoke too much weed and I just have a shit memory.
It took me 2 years to get used to the weak left-handed shakes of comics and comedy and the lack of eye contact. Because all of that shit was all considered disrespect where I was coming from. So yeah. I come into an open mic like, what the fuck is the matter with these people? You know what I mean? They're disrespecting the shit out of me. And I realize, oh, they just don't come from where I come from and they don't have that same training.
We got guys like we were talking about Attell. Attell's a very reserved, quiet guy. But he's very generous. Like, he's a very like generous guy. He's a very, you know, he brings young comics with him all the time, you know, when he does shows. And you're also a very generous guy too. Like, you help a lot of people that don't have a lot of pull in the business as well. So, I mean, unless we know you, because you do come off kind of like an asshole.
Yeah.
You do. You're like, because I think you're abrasive because one, you don't know people, so you're weary of them.
Yeah.
You're also Latino.
It's also my defense mechanism.
So you're also an asshole.
So, well, no, I just feel like, I just grew up with a bunch of ball busty sort of dickhead guys. Like, nobody was nice. Everyone was poor.
Right, everyone
was like, you know, having the shit beat out of them by their parents. Like, this is like every kid that I fucking knew.
Yeah.
So we just were sort of like a little bit abrasive, you know? And to be honest with you, that's what I find funny. Like, the guys like Patrice, I always found them very funny. Bobby Kelly, super abrasive. Like, right. I always thought Bobby was hilarious.
Another, you know, nice guy. Another guy who's like
really literally generous. One of the nicest people in the fucking world. But if you don't know Bobby, you're like, this guy's a fucking psycho asshole.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or
if you pretend to know him, you know, people will let you know you don't know me.
Yeah.
You know, you don't fucking know me. Well, why are you talking to me like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can't just jump into that kind of thing with somebody unless you know them. And then once you get to know that person, boom, it's like, you know, you guys can break balls all day.
Well, here's the other thing. It's like, it takes a while to establish yourself in this business. Really, most businesses, especially in the world of entertainment or art, it's like, you know, I think for a long time I had a chip on my shoulder. You know, a really long time. And I don't have that same chip because I've had a little bit of success recently. And it was like you sort of walk around like, you know, fuck, dude. Like, you're bitter against life. You're bitter with the hand that you're dealt.
Oh, do tell.
But you walk around sort of like, fuck, dude. Like, can I just not catch a break? And then eventually when you come out of it on the other side, you realize like, oh, shit, I'm glad I didn't catch any breaks. Yeah. I'm glad I went through this process and figured out how to have this on my own.
It's funny you say that because you kind of have that in common where you guys are self-sufficient motherfuckers. You guys go, okay, so you're not going to help me? Then fuck it. I'm going to do it myself and I'm going to do it as best as I can, better than you. And that's why, like, I admire you too, man, because you're the one who told me, because I'm like, dude, I can't get into clubs right now. And meanwhile, you're doing it less than me, you know, less time than me on stage. And you're like, dude, fuck that shit. Just just make your own shit.
Yeah.
You know, keep making your content and keep getting up as much as you can where you can. And then, you know, and then you'll be fine. So it's like, you know, you kind of take the whole concept of getting, because when I started doing comedy, it was like all you had was the clubs in the city. I mean, really, that's all we had. There was no Brooklyn shows. There was nothing like that was crazy, you know, in the mid-2000s. It was just all like, it was either the Boston Comedy Club, you know, Caroline's, Stand Up New York, and that was pretty much it. Carol, you know, and it was so hard. It was so hard to get stage time because you're fucking, again, you're fighting with titans
yeah.
to get on stage, you know? So the concept in my head was burned into my head. I got to get into these clubs. I got to get past these
clubs.
Well,
it's so funny because think about how often you like you meet a manager of a club, like, hello, I am Anthony. And you're like, you're trying to kiss their ass in a weird way.
Right.
I was never good at that stuff, right? Yeah. So that, well, like, either. Let me get this guy to fucking like me. It ain't happening, right? What I could do is I could develop an audience and I could get people to fucking get what I was doing. And that wasn't even super easy. I'm unlikable and I'm a tough pill to swallow for even the audience. For people that listen to me on podcasts, they have to listen to me two or three times on a podcast before they get what I do. A lot of people are like, I fucking hated that guy at first. Most of the audience that likes me now, they were like, I fucking hated that guy on YKWD or Legion of Skanks or whatever it is. And through just, you know, I sort of break through because I think people start to understand it after a while. But that side of it, it was easier for me to find an audience than it was for me to get these comedy club managers or these bookers to like me or the industry to like me. It was never going to happen. And that, it's very disheartening because in the beginning, you don't have an opportunity to build an audience.
It's hard. It's really hard.
It took me a decade to understand how to even, and it took honestly podcasting and creating, like, you create this content that people fall in love with. And luckily, a byproduct of people falling in love with the product is they fall in love with you and they understand your rhythm and they want to listen to you speak. But it was, we created these podcasts that started generating an audience, and then slowly you turn the people that are fans of your podcast into fans of everything you do. So, that side of the industry, that's how comedy used to be. When we first started, and I've been doing comedy for about 15 years now, when I first started in comedy, and this is all of us, like the path was to get a comedy booker to like you. You had, not only did they have to like your comedy, they had to like you and they had to be looking out for you. And it's like there was all these gatekeepers in the industry. And what's beautiful is that they're no longer fucking there. They don't exist. Where once you break through to the other side where you have an audience, like if a comedy club doesn't want to book me, I will book the bar across the street and I will do better than the comedy club is doing that night.
Yeah.
So, you know, at one point you realize that's not important. All of those gatekeepers, all those bookers, all the comedy managers, all the agents, they truly don't fucking matter.
Right.
They're just hangers-ons, right? Hangers-ons?
Hangers.
Shut the fuck up, roll Shannon, it. You fucking bitch. I see you laughing at my speech patterns.
I love Shannon's hangers.
Finally, some comedy.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
But you're right, absolutely. I mean, those guys, because a lot of those bookers, I'm not, you know, you never name names, but, you know, they get so used to people kissing their ass. They love it. You know, they feel like they're so empowered by it. You know,
they think
know that
they should have a podcast.
Oh yeah, have you ever heard a comedy
Ooh.
Manager's podcast?
Ooh.
Oof. Okay, let's switch gears here.
What we got?
We got a few minutes left here. I'm fucking excited. We're gonna go train us.
So black cocks, huh?
Hell yeah.
All right.
Let's see. Quick
big
stories.
Black cocks.
These are Harrington stories. Noose found hanging from a tree in Farallon, New Jersey. I put it there. All right, mystery solved. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, they found my noose.
Oh, listen, I mean, there's nothing wrong with a warning.
When you see a noose hanging from a tree, I mean, Dave, you're the only black person here.
Well, you know what they say. No noose is good news.
What, I mean, is it not just obviously some punk-ass kid, the same punk-ass kid who draws a swastika on the side of a building? Like, fucking Klansman, right?
I'm probably wrong to ask, because I'm just not sensitive in that area at all.
Probably an Eagle Scout.
The neck?
I am not affected by something like that. I wish I was, and I have a lot of black friends that I see go crazy over stories like that, and I'm just like, dude, like, somebody threw that there for you to just get distracted.
See, you didn't get the reaction.
Do we believe that there are Klansmen putting nooses in trees? I just don't think that that's...
Or it's one asshole.
This is it right here.
Oh, come on. That's not even like a real fucking noose. That's like...
Jesus Christ. Look at this guy giving himself away.
That's all wrong.
That's like a... Listen. An Eagle Scout didn't make that, right?
That looks like somebody like who created a trap for a rabbit. Yeah. That's all that is a bunny trap.
There's a bucket of KFC under it.
looks like somebody like had a tent up right next to it and they just stopped... They forgot to bring the rope down.
I'm not
going to
sit here and deny that this probably doesn't have a racial undertone to it, but no one was harmed. It was just hanging from a tree.
It's also probably just some fucking, you know, some Puerto Rican off. Kid who's just being an asshole. Like, I don't
know. Puerto Rican grown man.
Like, when I see a swastika in a bathroom stall, I'm not like, holy shit, Nazis are here. I'm like, no, it's some punk-ass 14-year-old kid. Realize how fun it was to draw a swastika on a wall. It is just fun. You know, it's like cursing, right? You release, it's just whatever it is.
You're
like, let me be naughty. Let me fuck with people a little bit, right? That was the thing in high school. You would see, it's like, you know, I hate Jews. And then somebody would circle, was like, your mother's a fucking cunt. And then somebody would circle that and be like, yeah, but your mom's an N-word.
Right.
And it was just sort of like, just, you're saying the no-no words that you're not supposed to say.
The only thing I could think, the reason why people get sensitive about this, I can say that doesn't really exist in, like, black people. Like, we don't draw on walls like, fuck white people, fuck, like, we
What
don't.
Do you guys say when you stub your toe?
We're smooth, bro. We don't do it, you know?
It's like, me!
When a black guy stubs his toe, he just starts dancing, you know what I mean? Like,
what do you do when you step on your dick?
Yeah, it's like a form of like real life trolling, and plus, you know? and it didn't exist like before we had outlets like YouTube comments or Twitter, or you can make anonymous comments on Reddit. Yeah. I think that was like people's release for something like that, and I believe that 90% of the racism that you see online is exactly that, and it sort of becomes this big, like, we watch it, social media sort of created this like, this is like this. Almost volley back and forth between like trolls. At first it was all trolls, and then it just became bigger and bigger and bigger, and then people started getting really emotional, and it's like, now I think that there is like a weird amount of actual racism out there.
I disagree.
So?
It's 80% of the world is retarded, so like whatever narrative you put on there, they consume it so much they begin to just believe it and act it out blindly. Like, you understand? Like, most of those people that did the shit last week on Capitol Hill, they're like adults who have mortgages, bills, and everything, but somehow from consuming social media, it got them committing felonies.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, they're the same. I don't know how to explain it, but it's just like they've been brainwashed. They don't normally behave that way.
Watching the
No,
way
they're
the
acting like a bunch of.
Watching the way the media portrays, it's pretty funny. Like, right? So I don't give a fuck about politics at all. Everyone knows it about me. But watching the way, like, if you turn on MSNBC, like, when you watch the Antifa protests and the Black Lives Matter protests, where they were, I mean, looting and burning cars, it was a lot of that. I mean, so much of the amount of damage that was done during those protests. And they were like, this is peaceful. It's fucking kumbaya. Like, everybody's, you know. And then they show the, the Capitol protests, and they ignore the fact that there are literally a million people out there that are just standing there protesting, and they show the 300 people that are fucking morons. There are morons. Don't get me wrong. Like, they're absolute fucking idiots. But they show these people, and they, like, the way the news is, like, they beat down a cop. And just so unapologetic. Now the cops are good. Now, like, the cops are heroes again.
That's how retarded they are.
It's just fucking crazy. Like, it's so disingenuous to watch the way the media portrays all of it. You're like, holy shit. Like, how do you watch the news and not go like, wow, dude, we are just being treated like absolute idiots.
Cattle, yeah, because it's like, you don't remember 3 months ago, you felt the exact opposite the way you feel now. Like, most people during this quarantine have not had an original thought in their brain in months. They've just wake up and look at social media, and whatever social media tells them to feel that day, that's what they do.
Did you guys see what happened to the guy who was in Pelosi's office?
Yeah, no, what happened?
Shannon, could you Google? I think his name is Stanton. He was from Georgia.
Yeah,
this is. I think it's the guy that stole Pelosi's laptop.
Did he go? Okay. Did he go back to work?
She left her laptop at the desk. Isn't it supposed to be locked up?
Well, they found him. With Shannon, is it coming up?
Let's see.
Because that'd be dumb to steal a government laptop. So, well, track it.
In my opinion, that whole
I think they found it.
But like, I have more of a problem with somebody fucking throwing a bottle through a window of a business than anybody storming the Capitol building. I what do you want me to say?
They stayed in the velvet ropes.
I don't understand.
They were such bootlickers.
I think the message they're giving us is that, okay, when they go for middle class people, when they start attacking their businesses and their neighborhoods and creating problems, and for middle class people and for poor people and for black owned businesses, that's fine. We're gonna, you know, it's we're gonna look away and not really cause, you know, no one's gonna get arrested for this. This is not a big deal. But when you start going after the politicians,
Then they're showing us, okay, yeah, now the FBI is involved. Now we're gonna find everybody. We're gonna face recognition them, and we're gonna take them. And these people who had no plan whatsoever. These people had no strategy. There wasn't a coup. It wasn't an insurrection. It was going in and fucking shit up because it's you know, because they're mad. They're angry people, and they just want to fuck shit up just like everyone else did. And then you go, okay, but now we got to treat these people differently than them.
Yeah,
it makes no sense.
Caught up in that. Like, I feel like I'm smarter than 95% of the people who are outside, and I barely understand politics. So how the fuck did they understand that much to be that charged to be out there with a gun and be like, because I feel this way about, like, you know what I'm saying? I just think they're
it's the exact same emotion as
football.
So it's a volley, right? So the exact same emotion that people that were protesting for Black Lives Matter. On the other side of it, on the other end of the spectrum, you have these people that are like, well, fuck, like, you know, I've been called because I'm white, because I'm fucking, because I feel this way politically, because I was raised this way, I'm being called a racist and a piece of shit. And you start to get people really angry. Like white guys, I mean, dude, just white guys having to take it on the chin for the past like 5 years, just being called racist, being called pieces of shit, being called, dude, I grew up with a lot of white people. None of them were privileged. No, they were all fucking kids of drug addicts. They were all having the shit beat out of them by their stepdads. They were all fucking pouring on welfare. There's no privilege there. Maybe the color of their skin is a slight privilege, but let me tell you something, dude. None of the kids that I grew up with feel as if they were privileged. So I understand the anger. At one point, if you're a white kid, you're like, dude, I don't have anything. Like I grew up in like a drug addict family. Like all the people that you watch at those protests, those the
hey, tell them don't take my fucking package. That's mine. All
right. I don't know what he's doing.
I know, right? It's so funny. It's like watching a deaf guy.
You see those guys that are at the Capitol Hill protest, and the guy, especially the guys that are like ransacking, like, dude, they're all fucking bearded, shitty teeth, fucking like probably
it's the same people,
probably
who were
white
looting.
Trash.
Right. It's the same version. It's the white version of who was breaking into sneaker stores.
Yeah, I don't believe that those people are privileged. I think you see their fucking shitty teeth and you see their fucking smelly beards and you go like. At one point you go like, who the fuck are you to tell me that I'm privileged? Like I had nothing growing up and now fucking, you know, you sort of create this, you create this feeling and this, when your back's against the wall, you want to start swinging, you know? And I understand you have a level of, and I just like the same way I have a level of sympathy for, cause look, I'm Puerto Rican. So I look at it from, I'm not black. I haven't dealt with the same, you know, racial issues that black people have. I've dealt with a lot of racism in my life. Right. And I'm not white. So I haven't really dealt with, you know, being considered being super privileged. Right. So I look at it a little bit differently, but it's sort of, like when you put somebody's back against the wall, they want to swing. When they feel as if there's nowhere else to go, they're going to swing back. And I feel like it's just us constantly pushing somebody else's back against the wall and going, look at you. You got this. You got this.
Right.
And it creates this fucking anger. When you realize that, like, we all have fucked up lives. Everyone has their worst day and everyone has their best day. Even if you're a fucking millionaire, you still have your worst day, which is, you know, even if you're super privileged, you still have the day that your fucking dad died or the day you fucking lost this thing and it was the biggest moment of your life where you feel fucking sad and you want to kill yourself.
Or your ski breaks.
This fucking, it's human, it's human, it's a quality of being a human being. Yeah, and right. I think that there's no compassion for other people's problems and there's no compassion for other people's plights.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that if we started looking at it as like, oh no, this person doesn't have better than this person, everybody has their worst day, I think we would start treating each other a little bit better. And I think that's what's going on. And we, the media, the government, everybody, they love pitting us against each other. They love that volley because they could take advantage of it, whether it's the media with views or it's the politicians that are getting votes. It's sort of the same thing. They know they need to, it's divide and conquer. If you've ever dealt with a narcissist, they fucking divide you. You know, they fucking try to create that divide and conquer dynamic. And we're all just sitting here fucking going after each other when I don't really know anybody, even the people that I know that would be considered racist. They're not really racist. They're not like, I fucking hate that person because of the color of his skin or where they're from.
Or they're not allowed in my house.
Yeah, it's just sort of like little microaggressions and little, you know, ignorant.
They're not allowed in my daughter.
You're not allowed inside of my daughter.
Yeah, but it's fascinating to find. But it's fun, even when your back is against a wall and you are in a bad situation, you'll still watch humans divide based off of subtle differences, all right? So I'm about to give you guys like probably the worst example as a black man on Martin Luther King Day. However, Your first week, if you've ever, I mean, you guys probably never been to jail, like county jail or anything like that, have you?
I've been to jail.
County?
No. Like, No.
Just bookings. Okay. Overnight.
I was booked.
Your first week.
Hey, you finally got booked.
Your first week in quarantine.
Come on, yeah. Yeah, Zach will snake that shit.
But your first weekend, right, and you have to go to a quarantine for like 7 days before you get any other processing. But there are some guys who aren't in orange jumpsuits. Some guys are in red jumpsuits. Now, if you've never been in before, what the fuck does that mean? So you start talking to other people, right? Well, what I found out was these guys are either suicidal, going through withdrawal, or they have like AIDS or something like that. They're basically on high alert. The guards need to watch them. But those things... finding out those differences but not knowing what they are, you watch the other inmates who are in orange stray away from the red. We're all in jail. We're all in a bad situation, but we're already dividing. Well, I'm not in the red jumpsuit, so fuck that guy, and I got to watch that guy to make sure. You know what I mean? And it's a weird divide and conquer type situation where I should be friends with the guy in the red jumpsuit. We should be trying to figure out a way out of here. But because he got on a different color suit, we don't talk to each other.
Hold on one second. Harrington, if my parking pass ran out 2 minutes ago, why wouldn't you put it in for more?
Uh-oh.
Huh?
Right?
I thought you only did an hour at a time.
No, you could do up to 2 hours. It's fine. We're going to wrap this one up anyway. We're at an hour and a half. But don't text me that my parking pass ran out 2 minutes ago. Go fucking put another 15 minutes on it, you cocksucker.
Shannon, did you find what happened to that gentleman?
Yeah, I think was this what you were referring to?
Yup.
Shot himself
in the chest with quotation marks.
Oh, he posted bail and killed himself?
No, he didn't kill himself. That's the whole point. Somebody
shot him in the chest and they said it was him.
Oh, wow.
Because the most convenient way to kill yourself is shooting yourself in the chest.
Yeah, that's how
it's
I
nearly
do it.
Impossible. How do you shoot yourself in the chest?
It's just, I don't know. I think you'd have second thoughts at some point.
Death by suicide. Ruled suicide.
Dude, unbelievable.
Wow. Gunshots.
A lot of people committed suicide. Now, huh? Yeah. After the Capitol riots, man.
That cop killed himself too, I think. After the riot.
What the fuck, man? They don't want conspiracies, and why are they making that shit so conspiratory?
Yeah.
It gets real suspicious. People start fucking...
Yeah, even I'm biting on this one.
Yeah.
All right, look, let's wrap this show up. Yeah, this has been a fun one. Thank you guys for watching. We'll be back on Wednesday. Who are the guests Wednesday, Shannon?
Hold on, sorry. Dave Landau and Shane Smith.
That's fun. Okay, Dave Landau, Shane Smith, Wednesday. That'll be a fun one. Thank you guys for watching. We will be back on Wednesday. Thank you. Good night.
That's all, folks.